Hello, I'm Barry Daniel, and this is the podcast of the Middle Way Society. Our aim is to encourage a universal approach to living a more integrated, ethical life, avoiding dogma or any appeal to authority. Our guest today is Nancy L. Morgan, a psychologist at a private practice in clinical psychology and a director of behavioural health at Life Moves. Life Moves is an organisation that combats homelessness in the San Mateo and Santa Clara counties of California in the US. And this will be the topic of our conversation today. Hello, Nancy. Welcome to the Middle Way Society podcast.
Hello, Barry. Thank you so much.
Okay, well, could you begin, Nancy, by maybe telling us something about your background and how you got involved with Life Moves.
Okay. Well, I grew up in Green Mountain Falls, Colorado, a small town up in the Rockies. And I went away to college, University of California in Santa Cruz, and then did further studies in psychology. So I had a background in women's studies and psychology, and then a master's degree in industrial organizational psychology, which is really very much psychology applied to the work environment.
Okay.
And then a PhD in clinical psychology, because I was really interested not only in work environments, but in interpersonal issues. So one of the things that's a little unusual, though, about my trajectory is after going to school for so long, I didn't feel prepared at all to work with clients. Feeling that there was still something that was missing from my my skill base. So I left the field for 7 years, moved up to Southern Oregon, got a bed and breakfast, and considered what it was I could do to improve on my sense of confidence and competence working with people. And when I moved up, I discovered something that I wasn't familiar with, which was Vajrayana Buddhism, sometimes known as Tibetan Buddhism. And I got very involved and invested in my Sangha and learned as much as I could from my teachers, and I continue to. But it was there that I realized that I was learning some of the really important skills around mindfulness and just about the nature of mind. And I recognized then that this was the missing piece. So after those 7 years away, I came back. And I got licensed, and I started implementing mindfulness into my practice.
Okay, and then what was the connection with Life Moves? How did you get involved with Life Moves?
Well, the connection with Life Moves started after I was down back in the San Francisco Bay Area for a year. I was so overwhelmed by the commute here and how long it would take me to get to the other job that I'd had that I did a little bit of searching, and I discovered that Life Moves was looking for a director of behavioral health. So I went in to apply, and they were already doing interviews, and I was very fortunate. It was a perfect fit because the agency covers two counties. It's the largest of its kind in Northern California, working to break the cycle of homelessness, and they provide among their 10 different shelter sites opportunities for graduate students to work for almost 11 months to work with families and children and individuals. A lot of veterans from the recent wars, Afghanistan and Iraq.
Yep.
And I was able to develop the existing program, which then was about 8 or 9 years old. And that's where I developed a trauma-focused mindfulness-based training program for the students so that they could bring this awareness and knowledge to the work they do serving the clients. So for me, Barry, it was the position that was of all of my historic work and effort and practice.
Fantastic. Okay, well, should we have a look at a bit more in depth at the topic? So why do people normally become homeless?
Well, I can speak directly to the individuals that we provide services for. So we're looking at about 1,000 people a night who will be utilizing our services and having shelter each evening. What we're seeing most commonly is a recent job or income loss. We're in an area where the rents are going up incredibly. And so all it'll take perhaps is a job loss or some rent increase. And the combination of both will mean somebody is either going to be doubling up with other individuals. And a lot of people are trying to share homes here now, or literally having to move to their car. We also see family breakups. And that often happens, especially if a woman becomes a single head of household. and she has children. What we see also is illness, substance abuse, possibly unattended to mental health challenges. And then we just have the truth of the fact that there have been individuals with a history of trauma, yep. history of poverty, or maybe just a history of making consecutive bad decisions to the point that they couldn't actually start to remedy them and found themselves, again, homeless.
Yeah, so what you seem to be saying, a lot of homelessness is hidden then.
Exactly. And I don't know what it's like over there in the UK, but here it is, especially with families, Barry, it is hidden. And it's hidden because so many families will double up with other families or live in garages or basements of other families' homes. They'll try to get an RV and live in an RV, or they'll just go to their cars and try to live in their cars, mostly so they can keep their kids in school in the area and have as little disruption as they can in their life. But what we think of homeless, what I traditionally used to think of homeless, were the sort of staggering individuals going down the street with tattered clothing and maybe mumbling to themselves. That is actually a very small portion of who we're truly serving these days who are homeless.
Mm-hmm. But do you feel that you have to fight against often a quite a stigmatized view of homeless people?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think that's true because we all have the image in our mind that we usually, how we usually encounter homelessness. But you're reminding me of my supervisor at work, the vice president of programs and services. He's been with the agency for quite a while, about 12 years. And he was sharing a story about the desire to bring in a really beautiful, large family structure that covers basically a block in a neighborhood not far from us, and the opposition that he received initially. But they really continue working with the community and trying to educate community members. The site has now been in place for, I believe, about 8 or 10 years. It's a beautiful family site. And recently, while my boss was giving a talk, a gentleman came up to him and said, "I was one of the people who had opposed you vehemently, and I'm embarrassed now, and I'm sorry, I just didn't know." And he wrote him a check for $5,000 on the spot.
Wow, that's quite an inspiring story. Would you say that example sort of, in many ways, exemplifies the ethos or the sort of mission of Life Moves?
Yes, actually. I don't know that's actually in our mission statement because it's so much associated with breaking the cycle, but it's certainly one of the ways to do it is to educate the community and reach out to the community and have us really all work together to embrace any homelessness or potential homelessness as a community issue and something we can all work on together.
Okay, let's move on to the clients. How easy is it for someone who is homeless to get access to the help you provide?
Well, we have a lot of referral channels that people are mostly, I think that might be the big challenge, Barry, is how do people find out what the appropriate referral channels are? It's usually word of mouth on the street, people who know each other and they know how to connect to us. But it's just also as easy as individuals contacting us directly, calling our phone number, going to maybe local services and supports areas like our drop-in center, where a lot of individuals just come in off the streets during the day. We have one drop-in center, and individuals will come in to do their laundry, take a shower, and we have all of our resources there, and the word will filter out into the community. But the other thing, too, is if anybody seeks county supports, the county connects to us. And then we have a homeless outreach team where community members and the members of the police will contact us and say, let us know if you've got anybody out there, and we'll communicate with you and see what we can do to help that person get into services in the county and possibly get into services with you. Or the police or community members will contact us and say, "We think somebody's living in their car, or we notice somebody who's looking like they're encamping down by a creek. And so we'd like to ask you to come in with your team and see if you can't support them in getting a shelter for the night."
Great. So there's obviously quite a degree of integration with your organization and other, like, as you say, the police and presumably other social service providers as well.
Yes. Even businesses, downtown businesses who are familiar with individuals who have maybe historically been homeless, but are now in our shelters.
Yeah.
And right now, they might still see these individuals on the street, know them well, but they engage with them knowing that they have shelters and that they have a place to go at night, and they become part of the visible community.
Okay, what do you actually require from your clients?
We have clear requirements, and one is that if any individual or family is coming into our sites, into our shelter sites, they have to either be working or actively engaged in finding a job. And that's one of the core supports that we provide is financial supports and also career supports. So we will do everything from providing supports for resume building, for preparation for interviews, to actually going to sites and working sort of as coaches to help people maintain their jobs once they get them. And we try to support people obtaining work in agencies and industries that will be sustainable once they've obtained their stable housing when they leave our transitional shelter.
So, okay, so if someone doesn't have a job, that's not, it's as long as that person is actually trying to get a job. That's the critical thing.
Exactly, because when they're in our shelters, they're not paying for anything. They have the shelter. They've got a wonderful, supportive, safe environment, and they have the supports, including childcare, after school, tutoring programs, homework assistance, just as many supports as we can possibly provide for individuals so that they are able to go out and get work and maintain work. And the goal is that whatever they get will support them after they've left us. What we find too is sometimes we'll have intact families who come in. Both parents are working and have been, but it's not enough anymore because their rent was just increased so much.
Yeah.
So we work with those individuals to try to obtain higher paying jobs and jobs that will allow them to either stay in the area or transition to an area that's not as expensive but has that same type of employer there.
Okay. And then it sounds like one of the big problems why people are homeless is just the really high rents in your area. Through your organization, are you able to lobby at all to try and, you know, to keep them under a certain limit, or is that an activity you're involved in as well?
Yeah, the leadership of our agency is working very closely with leadership in both counties to identify every way possible to create housing and low-income housing. And we've actually had quite a bit of success. But, you know, the other thing we look at, as you say, rents have increased a lot here. Last year, 63% of the people we served were homeless for the first and hopefully last time, because we had a 95% success rate in placing these individuals from our transitional housing into stable housing. But again, some of those individuals did have to go out of the area simply because the writing's on the wall. They might have obtained some housing that works now, but who's to say what'll happen a couple years from now?
Sure. Okay. Well, in relation to this, there's a more general question, but to what degree do you think society in general is or should be responsible for ensuring people don't become homeless?
Well, if we just take the example of the last statistic I gave you, 63% of the people we served were homeless for the first time last year. I think what happens is in a community, we don't know who is homeless or on the verge of becoming homeless. So for me, and I believe I speak for Life Moves, we recognize this as a community issue and recognize there are small communities, so small communities can come together and in their own ways support individual members of their community. In large communities, we want to have a large response to the higher number of people that are facing homelessness or are currently homeless. I do believe it's part of a society that endeavors to grow and become as progressive and as supportive as we can be, rather than alienate and isolate ourselves from individuals who need support.
Yeah. And you're just going through a presidential election at the moment in the States. Is it a topic, homelessness, that's being discussed at all by the nominees?
Well, certainly by one of the nominees it is. I haven't heard, you know, we have so much talk about terrorism and talk about the horrible state of the economy. It's curious some of what's coming up right now in our dialogues. I think about you, too, with your recent issues around Brexit and how destabilizing that can be for communities, for a country. I think what happens right now is we're holding on to find out what's going to happen here, with concern for people who have been underserved or not noticed because they don't rise to a certain level of visibility in our communities. They're not affiliated with wealth or upward mobility. And I don't know. This is an area that I think we're all just hoping that the outcome is going to be one that's going to support all of us rather than just a few.
Okay, well, could we talk a little bit more about your personal role in the organization, Nancy?
So my role is Director of Behavioral Health. And what that means is I oversee the curriculum and the training for these students for a period of almost 11 months each year. Graduate psychology students come from four primary universities in the San Francisco Bay Area. I probably interview over 50 students a year for 10 positions, and it was a tight race to get in, but I feel like every individual who came really wanted to support our mission, to really provide supports, and especially the focus on early intervention. So that goes to people who are first-time homeless and to children. Children and families who have experienced the trauma of what it's been like for their family to be under this constant stress and financial strain that ultimately results them having to lose their home. So I incorporate as much research as I can, and I mostly have been basing it on a gentleman by the name of Bessel van der Kolk's work. He is a psychiatrist based out of Boston and has done remarkable research on the impact of trauma. So we utilize a lot of the resources that he has presented in his recent book, The Body Keeps the Score, and we use that as our foundational text in terms of teaching the students about trauma and working with individuals who've experienced trauma. And then the mindfulness-based piece we do, we really utilize resources like Kristen Neff's work on compassion towards self and others, because I'm wanting the students to develop the greatest capacity for compassion and presence and their own mindful awareness of what comes up for them when they're working with these individuals who've experienced trauma, and to really develop in themselves the capacity to work with anyone, if from 2-year-old to 70-year-old, from veterans to people with severe mental illness.
I don't know if you're aware, I actually interviewed Christine Neff a couple of years ago for the podcast, and find her work very interesting. Well, could you maybe just give us an example, Nancy, of a typical interaction between your staff and one of your clients? How does your work play out practically?
Okay, so the immediate example comes to mind that the students immediately, their setups, we have these shelters, we've got these 10 different sites, and now I have 15 students this year. So we've got teams of students, we started this last year, teams of students who really work independently. They're self-directed work teams, and they support these sites. So they get to know the case managers, and they get to know the child services coordinators and the program directors, and they work as a cohesive team. And usually what happens is the case managers who do the initial intake and explore a person's history of trauma at intake will immediately invite them and let them know of the opportunity to meet with a student therapist as soon as the person has their room and they're in. And so oftentimes the person will say, yes, I want to talk to somebody. So the referral will come from a case manager to me, and then I'll assign the referral to the students. And that's one way, but there's still stigma. There's stigma with homelessness. There's stigma with saying, I have mental health challenges. So oftentimes people will say, no, I don't want to talk to a therapist. But one of the things that's worked best this year is something we call milieu therapy. So the students will go and just spend blocks of time at different regional sites and get to know the kids and get to know the adults and the families, and often just engage them, and they'll start to become more and more familiar. So what has really worked well is a particular future client will come to the student therapist and say, oh, you know, I was hoping I'd see you again this week because I did have something come up and I wanted to talk with you. That's the opportunity for the student therapist to say, you know, I want to talk to you too. We're out here in the common area. If you want, we can book a time and that'll be reserved for you every week at this time. How would that be for you? And then when the person can initiate themselves, yeah, I want that time for me, then it's more about just talking with somebody rather than you know, talking with somebody they already know sort of commonly, and it's not the stigma of I'm going to be assigned to a therapist. And so that's worked very well this year, Barry.
That sounds great. And I suppose often in these situations, there's a concern that there's a hierarchy involved.
We want no hierarchy, none. We aspire to just having services and supports. In fact, we don't even have a treatment plan. We've completely gotten rid of the medical model where the therapist is the expert who treats. It's a transformational care plan. It's collaborative. We work with the client, with the case managers. And the ultimate goal is, how do we take the fact that the average person at our site stays 164 days? We've got a lot of work to do in that 164 days, and it's providing the services and supports that are going to best enable that individual or that family to sustainably attain stable housing.
Oh, it sounds very interesting, Nancy. Okay, well, in relation to that, a question maybe about your particular work and also about the organization in general. How successful have you been?
Okay. My work, we saw over 500 individuals, including children. We had preteen groups, teen groups. We've had a lot of focus on safety because so many people, especially with trauma histories, have subsequent PTSD, doesn't develop for everyone who's experienced trauma, but for a great number of people who didn't have services and supports initially when they needed them, or that when they came, they weren't adequate to really help that person deal with the trauma they experienced. So the success we've had from the behavioral health program's perspective is we recognize that trauma is going to be going on, or the impact of the trauma may be going on beyond the average stay. And so when an individual obtains stable housing, we have been able to continue to invite the individual back to the site where they had originally met with the therapist, and we will allow them to come back for up to 6 months. First time, it's once a week each time, and then it goes to once every 2 weeks, and then once a month. And really, that's just to help support them as they continue to stabilize in their new stable housing and get to access the community resources. And what we found is all the students ended up having clients that opted to come back and get supports for the initial 90 days. And usually after that, then they'd start to taper off. So that success, I would say, has been one of the greatest successes we've had. And we can only do that because our behavioral health program is funded 100% from donors who believe in this process and want to invest in it because they want to see that their investment goes toward stable housing for individuals. So that's the behavioral health program.
And then for the organization in general?
For the organization in general, it's I think I referenced earlier something about 95%. It's 97% of the families last year and 82% of the individuals who were able to complete our shelter housing program. It means they were among those who stayed for that average stay. They obtained stable housing. So that was a huge success for the agency.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay, you mentioned a little bit about finance a minute ago. Could you tell us a little bit about that structure? Are you publicly funded as well?
We are. We have a little over $19 million annual budget, and our funding is 66% public, and the remaining 34% is private.
And the public funding, how is that sourced?
Well, we're right now looking at some Medicare funding, Medicare and Medi-Cal funding. We had a request by one of the counties we work with to utilize these funds to be able to continue providing supports to community members in that county. And then we also have both counties looking at ways to provide funding in terms of the county resources that they have and how they'll allocate them, and the amount that they'll allocate toward homelessness, they'll direct toward us so that we can utilize that funding in a way that provides services to the county residents, the county members who are seeking these supports. And so the county has counties will have direct relationships with us and wanting to allocate certain amounts of money for families and for individuals. I can't speak to it beyond that because I'm not involved at that level of the organization.
That's fine, yeah. Okay, And in terms of personnel, Nancy, how large are you? I mean, are you mainly volunteers, or to what percentage of you are roughly are fully paid staff?
We have 215 employees, and I believe about 170 of those are full-time.
Yeah.
The rest part-time. And then this gets to your question about community and whose responsibility is it, you know, the issue of homelessness. Last year, we had 36,000 volunteers. And when you look at just back in 2012, I believe it was, we had, I think we had probably about 12,000. So my numbers might be off just a little bit, but what we've done, what our departments have done, are find different ways to more successfully track the number. We may have actually had more, but they just weren't able to track them all. So we're tracking better, but we're also really out there in the community. So we have people from high school students all the way up to faith-based communities, to community partnerships, agencies, organizations. We have a lot, as you know, of high-tech agencies here who contribute a lot to our agency in terms of resources and also times that their members of their community will just come in. Like we had Stanford students come in and completely renovate a meeting group for teenagers in one of our family sites, and they completely decorated it in Stanford memorabilia, including signed helmets and footballs and things like that that are encased there. So it's a really, the place has a lot of spirit and a lot of fun. You'll see that happening over and over at our site.
That sounds an enormous number of volunteers, 36,000. What would you say LifeMove has done to maybe encourage that enthusiasm?
Well, you know, we've been around a while. There were two separate agencies, each in the two counties, that then merged just about 4 years ago, recognizing it's a common issue across both counties. Together we're stronger. So there's a history that I think goes back about 35 years. That was just our fledgling effort in San Mateo County to really address homelessness. Word of mouth's been out there for a while. We had a big rebranding last year when we became Life Moves, because before that we had been Envision Shelter Network, which was a combination of the names of both of those agencies and a common logo, which just showed a little sort of house. But one of our patrons recognized how much we do, which is so far beyond providing shelter, and so decided what we're involved in is really transitioning people into a sustainable, stable housing, and that's the movement part. And so everything that we did around the rebranding, we broadcast across the communities and updated our website, and we have many, many speakers who go out and speak, and we're on speaking panels. And I think we're reaching out there. This might be a good example, too, reaching out through a podcast, reaching out through TED Talks, and utilizing technology to let people know that this model exists, which is beyond just providing shelter. It's an integrated supports model. And if people are interested, then we have an opportunity to dialogue with them in the future.
Sure. Okay, well, just a couple more questions, Nancy. What's your understanding of the middle way in relation to what we've been talking about today?
The word that always I hear coming to mind with middle way is balance, so that we're not looking at dogma, we're not looking at extremes, that we're really looking at how to utilize the best resources, the most information that we have to arrive at the appropriate response in terms of whatever is needed at the time, in terms of our thoughts, our actions, and the supports that we provide. So I think about it from the perspective of knowing the appropriate response by drawing on all of the resources and information we have in all directions.
Great. Okay. And if people wanted to find out more about Life Moves, perhaps to, you know, to get involved themselves, and also maybe your work as a psychologist, how would they go about it?
Well, Life Moves website is www.lifemoves, and that's one word, LIFEMOVES.org. And they'll find a lot of information there. For me, I'm at www.drnlmorgan.com, short for drmorgan.com, Dr. N. L. Morgan. And I have a website that's posting some recent research we did And we're hoping to get published, but I'm just put it up on my website, and it's with regard to asking 78 of our residents across both counties the qualities they most desire in a therapist, which is an important training piece that I utilize in the training of the students, because they don't necessarily learn how to cultivate those qualities of compassion, empathy, presence in school. So we have an opportunity in the training site to work on those capacities. But the beautiful thing is it comes directly from the clients themselves saying, this is what we really benefit from if you can develop this in yourself.
Yeah, that sounds great, Nancy. Anyway, good luck with all the great work you're doing. And thank you very much for talking to me.
Barry, thank you very much.
You can find out more about Middle Way Philosophy at www.middlewaysociety.org.